Hello and welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Hello, and welcome to Bedlam. This episode is watchable, which is the highest praise that I can probably bestow post-jump. We have a clearing of the decks in terms of the placeholder boyfriends. Liam and Jordan officially get their walking papers. And in terms of non-Rosewood employment, Mary Drake continues to drake around all over town. The liars finally seem to be catching on that Elliot maybe is bad. And every single man thinks he knows better than every single woman. Also, Liam is a hero for the ages. Put some respect on his name.
Yeah, you know, I texted you, like, for a post-jump ep, I kind of liked this. Like, I was watching it and I was like, this is like, I'm kind of having a good time with this episode. It's definitely a more introspective episode than it feels like we've had in a long time. It is an episode that's like actually kind of dealing with the liar's trauma in a way that very few of the post-jump episodes seem very interested in doing. It's hitting some interesting beats that I feel like we have not necessarily really seen, you know, in this post-jump. It also, like, we talked last week about how it felt like they were kind of doing a bit of a hard left out of some of the storylines and into some new ones. And that's absolutely continuing this episode, like you said, with the clear decks. Like, it feels like the show is really saying, okay, we're centering the liars here in Rosewood. We're not sort of screwing around with this idea that they're going to leave anymore. Here we are.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, post-jump, we're grading on a pretty big curve. I agree that this episode is not so bad for a post-jump entry.
And I would say a pretty large improvement over last week's episode.
Oh, yeah, last week's was really bad. I also will say that I think you were right that Mary Drake is going to be a highlight of this half season. Like, watching it now on the rewatch and, like, you know, kind of absent from, like, the point at which I was still expecting more from the show, I do have to say that just taking her as she is, Mary Drake is pretty fun.
Oh, I am having so much fun with Mary Drake. I just, like, she... In the absence of an Allison that has some bite to her, like, she is giving a lot of Allison energy. She's giving a lot of Mrs. D energy. She's giving some Jenna energy, I feel, this sort of creepy, omniscient presence. Andrea Parker is clearly having a ball. It seems like the other actors are having a fun time working with her. Like, she is, I'm having a lot of fun with her. Like, not expecting, like, knowing where she goes, I'm enjoying her.
Yeah, I like what you said about the Jenna energy of Mary Drake, because of course there's going to be like a nebulous piece of like, were they working together at some point? Like, what is the connection between them? And I really like to think that if Pretty Little Liars had gone on sometime in season 9, Mary Drake would have become kind of like, to give a Days reference, like the John Black of Rosewood, where like, anyone of unknown parentage probably belongs to her. So I think in season 9, she probably would have been revealed to be like Jenna's mom, as well as like, you know, maybe Sydney's mom, as well as like, you know, maybe like an aunt to Mona as well. So
why not? Why not? Yeah. And like Peter Hastings, I feel is the father version of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Like everybody is probably related to at least one of those characters.
Exactly. I have to say that the previous Lees put me in a grim mood because it starts with a Haleb kiss, then a Presria kiss, and then Hannah in her underwear, like boom, boom, boom. And I was like, oh, this is a rough start. This is a rough start.
It's true. But then once we get into the episode, we're starting off on a real high note with a campy ass Mary Drake scene to set the mood. Hannah is in the car, she's wrapped in a blanket, and she is insisting that she needs to be returned to her friends, no police, etc. In spite of just escaping the torture porn barn, Hannah and Mary Drake have a fainting, fencing conversation about how Mary can tell that she's one of Allison's friends. Mary is Jessica's secret twin, what it's like to be a secret person, although she is, dramatic scenery chewing pause, not one anymore. No, of course not. Like, you've known Hannah for 2 seconds and you're revealing your secret twinness and, you know, your relationship to Allison. And I think just, like, how nice that they have this little confab immediately post-kidnap. What a good way to reacclimate to normal Rosewood weirdness.
Oh, totally. You know, one of the things that frustrated me about Mary Drake during our first rewatch, side note, Mary Drake has the Noel Kahn quality where you always want to say her first name and her last name.
Like, yes.
I don't know why it doesn't feel right to just call her Mary. She's Mary Drake. And even the liars seem to be doing that. But I remember one of the things that I found really confusing about her character, take your pick, was that she was, like, she had been set up as, like, oh my God, Jessica had a twin sister. Oh my God, secrets and mayhem. And then it was like she was just walking around town casually introducing herself to everybody. And so it was like, well, this feels weird. Like, this character isn't doing a very good job of, like, hiding her identity. But now I quite enjoy the gusto with which she, like, tells her tale of woe to anybody who's willing to listen. Her line deliveries through this whole scene are so good, so funny. Also, I got a hearty chuckle over the fact that Hannah has a comment about how Allison never mentioned that her mother had a sister. And whatever HBO Max intern was doing the captions, put 2 question marks after that statement. And it's like, you know what? Same HBO Max intern. I'm with you on those 2 question marks.
Yeah, I completely agree. Also, I think that one thing that really sets Mary Drake apart is that she is having a fantastic time. She is having so much fun with this role. And yeah, that is more than you can say for a lot of the other cast members at this point. Not to, you know, shade anyone else who happens to be in this particular scene, but you can tell it's a very different energy level that people are bringing to the table.
For sure. For sure. I also love her pretending to not know Hannah's name. Like, obviously she knows everything about Hannah, but I love her being like, what's your name, dear? You know, like, it's great.
Yeah, she's gonna let Emily introduce herself later as well. Nice details there.
For sure. So over at the Hastings house, Hannah is in some cozy clothes and refusing medical treatment while everybody else worries over her. She says that no doctors mean no questions. Spencer insists that Hannah tell them about Mary. And then for some reason, the liars explain to the audience / Hannah all over again who Mary is. And, like, then Hannah re-explains to us why they think Mary is A. This is always the mark of, you know, when PLL is not feeling super confident in its storytelling, we're, like, restating mistakes, restating, like, our current theories. This is just a really weird scene because it's, like, the liars and everybody are filling Hannah in on everything that happened in the last episode, but it's, like, the audience saw all that stuff, so we don't need to hear all of this again, but they all claim to have found new evidence that convinces them that Allison was the killer. Hannah announces that she would like something stronger than coffee. Caleb comes over to Hannah and in this, like, very weird sort of ostentatious way hands her her engagement ring while Spencer looks on with concern. Meanwhile, Arya ignores a text from Liam and Prezra brings in a bouquet of flowers from AD that is essentially thanking everybody for the help. Although these flowers look more like, this looks more like a funeral arrangement to me than like thank you flowers.
Yes, I agree. And the message is, couldn't have done it without you. Glad we're on the same team. Which, again, an extremely uninspired message. The A messages post-jump are just not up to snuff.
They really aren't. They really aren't. Which makes me think that, like, I mean, I guess that this is Alex Drake. I feel like Mary Drake was not involved in writing these A messages because Mary Drake knows how to, like, turn a phrase.
She does. She does. I definitely agree. Oh, so Hannah, Caleb, Emily, and Spencer are returning Hannah to the loft. There is a package waiting that is from Lucas. Hannah snaps at Emily when Emily wants to put on water for tea for her. Emily requests to see Spencer in another room, and Hannah and Caleb take this opportunity for a chat about whether she's taking the deal from Lucas, about how far back they want to go together. Hannah says that she was scared in the room, and Caleb has always made her feel safe. Maybe that's, you know, why what happened between them happened. Just for a minute, you know, she's kind of stressing that it was a one-time solo circumstance. And Caleb seems devastated that she is not flinging herself back into his arms right now. Emily returns to the room and asks where Spencer is. It turns out that Spencer is out in the hall and may well have overheard this whole conversation. Again, this entire scene is just another example of why Caleb shouldn't get back together. Their communication is so bad, they can't even talk openly about getting back together. Ideally, they would have a reckoning about the reasons it didn't work out last time, what is or isn't different now. But nope, no such conversation to see here. No, indeed.
Yeah, this scene I felt was very weirdly blocked because it's like Emily is like, Spencer, can I talk to you? And then like Spencer goes in the hallway and Emily comes back and like, where's Spencer? Like, it just seemed it was like they needed to maneuver them into different rooms, but didn't know how for some reason.
The sets this week are not the best. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, there are like a lot of confusing blocking elements, of which yes. This is one.
Which seems, I don't know, that seems like a bizarre problem to have in your seventh season of a TV show, you know?
Yeah. Also, I think that we're seeing a couple different elements of the hard reset here. One of which is in the ultimate, you know, the finale of 6B, we had kind of Mary Drake being revealed as a villain who was in league with Rollins, and the two of them were involved in a villainous plan together. As we launch into this week's episode, we're starting to see that Mary Drake is actually like, she seems to be like cooling on Rollins. She seems to be feeling like their aims are no longer aligned. She seems more sympathetic to the Liars, more interested in kind of forming relationships with them. So we're kind of seeing a reset on Mary Drake and whatever they imagined her to be up to. And we're also, I think, seeing a reset on Hannah. Hannah, who previously seemed like highly interested in reuniting Caleb, this week seems to be the one who is putting more of the brakes on it at this time.
I was finding myself wondering, if there was some fan reaction informing, particularly the way Hannah is being written, because I think that like Hannah's behavior is pretty hard to swallow at the end of season six, and it does feel like they're kind of swerving away from some of that a little bit here. And kind of trying to, you know, it's like now she's putting her thinking cap on and getting back into designing. And, you know, she's sort of, they're making her almost a little bit more of an upstanding version of Hannah a bit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this sort of scene kind of continues out into the hallway where Spencer is tearful and wanting some space. Emily is basically going to have the same conversation with Spencer like four times during this episode. It starts here with her being worried that Allison might not be safe. They talk about telling Elliot, and Spencer says that she is worried about being locked up in Welby, which nobody really hangs a hat on it. But like there is mention later in this episode of the fact that Spencer was in Radley. And it's like, yeah, Spencer kind of is uniquely qualified to be concerned about being locked up in a mental institution again. Like, I feel like there could be more sensitivity around that coming from Emily. Spencer asks Emily to keep an eye on Hannah. And then there's a line here that I really, really like where they talk about how Hannah is exhibiting what they both refer to as the dollhouse look. And I loved that line both because it's like an acknowledgement of the dollhouse and an acknowledgement of something that happened before the time jump, which feels really revelatory at this point. But it also shows an understanding between the Liars and sort of a shorthand between them that I feel like we haven't really gotten to see much since they've been pretty fractured lately. So I really enjoyed that, especially since if we remember the Dollhouse time period, Hannah had seemed maybe in some ways more traumatized or traumatized in a different way from the other Liars. So I liked that acknowledgement.
Yeah, I loved that as well. The way that they really like it is a connection point between Emily and Spencer, and it's a way of kind of circling the wagons around Hannah. I really like that.
For sure. For sure. And then this little scene kind of just, I'll just put the end on it where it sort of continues with Emily asking Hannah if she wants to give Jordan a call, to which I say, please, would anyone give Jordan a call? Like, has anyone been in touch with Jordan? But Hannah does not want to.
Back at the Hastings, Spencer is pale and tragic and pretending to do some work for her mother. Caleb seems to be trying to convince her to come to bed. They are not looking at each other, and they are communicating via metaphors about Hannah being like an aircraft carrier, lots of firepower, but hard to maneuver. Spencer blames herself for not stopping Hannah from, you know, going through with her plan, and at one point jokes about ships being called she, LOL. Caleb kisses her on the head in a very patronizing way, which Spencer also seems to interpret as passionless. The kindest thing that Caleb could do here is to just tell Spencer the truth. But he doesn't. Caleb does not deserve either Hannah or Spencer at this point. He leaves and Spencer cries quietly. I blame this whole fucked up Hastings family dynamic for this situation. Spencer has been conditioned by her parents' weird deal to believe that whatever the other person does, don't leave. Spencer, you can leave. Leave this man. Dump that motherfucker already. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, this is like continuing the thing that started in the episode where Spencer was like morosely drinking the wine, and it's just going to continue for the next several episodes of just like Spencer tying herself in knots and being so tortured over this sort of like impending Caleb situation, but like Caleb being an absolute dick about it, who like refuses to be honest with her, and Spencer really being like afraid to full on, you know, kind of acknowledge what's happening. And so it's really weird. Like, I remember at the time, and this is continuing, like, this Spela breakup is so strange because it's like the slow erosion of their relationship rather than them ever really having, like, a concrete conversation about it. And also, like, Caleb continues to just be so patronizing. Like, the way that referring to Hannah as an aircraft carrier, I think, is super weird. Also, I think that Spencer, like, comparing Hannah to a ship, though, like the way she's like, there's a reason they call ship she's, like, that feels like something you'd say about your lover.
I agree.
So it's like this weird thing where like the erosion of Spaleb and the reunion of Caleb, all it really does for me is make me ship Spanna. Like, yeah. I don't think that was the intention, but like that's kind of how it shakes down.
It's clear how we get there. Also, I feel like Spencer is kind of in the position of, like, many women who've written into advice columns over time where, like, she eavesdropped, you know, she's, like, the girlfriend who, like, checked somebody's phone and snooped mm-hmm. and they shouldn't have, but now they found all this stuff about how they might be cheating, but they feel like, oh, if I confront you, I'll have to say that I was eavesdropping or whatever. Well, that is not necessarily even the case. Spencer could just be like, hey, your behavior when Hannah was missing seemed really off. You were a huge jerk to me, and you seemed extremely invested in what was going on with your ex-girlfriend. Let's talk about that. That would be a perfectly appropriate conversation to have, but the communication of all the couples in this episode is like, it's not even an F. It's like an F minus.
Well, that's going to continue into the next scene, because Emily is asleep on the couch, which I guess this is where she sleeps in the loft, when her phone rings. It's obviously Allison. Like, it's a woman asking for help and calling her name, who is clearly Allison. But Emily, who, like, her, it's like her barometer of like Allison attention is broken in such a way that it can only go to extremes. So it's only like she has no idea who Allison is, or she is extremely invested in Allison and like can't talk about anything or anyone else. So when she suddenly realizes that it is Allison, she kind of identifies Allison is like begging for Emily to help her. There sounds like there's like some noises of a struggle. A nurse tells Allison, you know, that she needs to let go. And it sounds like they're sort of wrestling over the phone. It's very torture porny as we hear Allison scream. Emerson Endgame. So romantic.
Yes. Yes. So this leads us to Emily being at Radley bright and early the next day, but oh no, the nurse will not let her in. She is unmoved by Emily's pleas that she just saw her the other day. She's the one who brought her in. The visiting instructions have changed. Only family can see her now. Emily insists that they page Dr. Rollins, but he is immediately on hand and says that he is the one who changed these rules. It is not in Allie or Emily's best interests for Emerson to be together right now, due to the writers having recently remembered they could be gay. He breezes away, and Emily sees a maintenance man removing a phone that is like a wall phone that definitely seems connected. Like, it seems like that is the phone that Allison perhaps got access to the night before. And so that's just kind of a moment of like, boom, boom, boom.
I love how Rollins is just always like drifting around the kind of like lobby area of this hospital, like signing paperwork, like, you know, like talking to a nurse, like checking in at the front desk.
Look, Rollins, I feel like it is possible that Rollins has a twin, or it is possible that Rollins is just the Forrest Gump of Rosewood, or like the Beetlejuice of Rosewood. Like, whenever you say his name, he just happens. Boom, he's at the hospital. Boom, he's in the De Laurentiis house. Boom, he's wherever the liars need to be confronting him at any particular moment. He is just bouncing around all over town.
Maybe he made some masks of his own face for other people to wear so that there could like be like a Rollins for every room, you know?
Yes, yeah. I like it.
Yeah, like a candle, you know, like you have one in every room. So over at the Radley bar, Hannah, it looks like, you know, she's freshened herself up a little bit more. She's like in a sweater, her hair is down. And unfortunately she is with Lucas, which I feel like when you're recovering from any type of trauma, Lucas is the last person you want nosing around. He's being his usual smarmy self, asking about Allison, and Hannah rightly shuts that shit down, saying, you know, why can't everybody just leave Allison alone? Hannah says that she's tired and she wants to know why he is so invested in this business for her. Well, obviously it's because he's obsessed with you, Hannah. But he says that he wants her to sign some papers and then asks her why she makes it so difficult for someone to do something for her, which I feel like is, you know, in the nice guy handbook, like I feel like that's like one of the like top 10 catchphrases that they teach you to say. She says that everyone thinks she's something she's not, someone smarter, someone braver, someone sharper, to which I say, oh no, she's internalized Caleb's logic about her. He says that they need to file a business plan, and he argues that making a decision, not making a decision, is making a decision. What is annoying here is, like, I like that Lucas is, like, building Hannah up and potentially like giving her some ideas of how she could live her life that aren't just like marrying Jordan, marrying Caleb, you know, but I hate that it's coming from Lucas because like we always know that there's an ulterior motive with him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's annoying that he says something that Hannah actually really does take to heart, which is that not making a decision is making a decision. And I feel like we see that, like we see that she takes that note when she does go and talk to Jordan later on.
Yes.
And I think that that's interesting. But also when she's saying, like, you know, everybody thinks that I'm something I'm not, like, well, Lucas thinks you're his future trophy wife. So let's just, you know, let's just put that on the table.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So Emily is trying again to get Spencer to do something about Allison being alone, vulnerable, unable to be visited in Welby. She is so desperate that she is willing to use Mary Drake to get them in. Spencer forbids this. They don't know, you know, enough about Mary Drake. And this is where Emily is. This is where Emily talks about the Radley stuff, right?
I think it's later because they have this conversation.
They do. Oh, they have it so many times. Okay, so Spencer forbids the Mary Drake thing. Hard no. She ignores a call from her work. Spencer still seems to be placing a weird amount of faith in Elliot for no good reason at all, especially since Emily has just advised that, like, Elliot is the one who's apparently changed the rules about who is allowed to see Allison.
Well, also, it's funny because it's like Emily, notoriously the most trusting of the liars, is like, I have a weird feeling about this guy. And Spencer, notoriously the most paranoid of the liars, is like, I don't want to go. I don't want to get into it. Like, it's a weird, I get why they need to write it this way, because they want to have Emily be really concerned about Allison. But I feel like it ends with, like, it just, they both feel like they're being written kind of out of character here, I think. Agreed. And they end up having the same conversation like three times in this episode.
Yes. I just looked ahead and you're right. It's the next time they have this conversation that they're going to bring up the Radley stuff.
Yes. So Aria, who is very bad at breakups, I think we can say, is passionlessly breaking up with Liam, saying that she has a lot of unresolved things in her life. Liam kind of replies that it sounds like she wants him to say thank you. Aria makes the cardinal flaw of, like, mentioning the thing that you're trying to pretend the thing isn't about. And she's like, well, this isn't about Ezra. And it's like, nobody said it was, Aria. Obviously, this raises a flag for Liam. And this just reminded me of all the Karate Jake stuff and how bad Aria was at that breakup. He has a surprise for her, though. Liam is back on the book and he'll be creative gatekeeper, which definitely sounds red flaggy. There's a question of if they have a problem, which obviously, although I do kind of enjoy this, like, slightly bitchy, slightly scheming Liam, I actually kind of forgot how much, like, I actually do kind of like Liam. Like, he does have some redeeming qualities. He says that he wants to see her get what she has always wanted, which continues to be the thing that men are telling women in this episode. And they talk about how at least they can cross the finish line of this book together. What I say is that I do not care about this book, nor do I really have any idea what this book is at this point, because it seems like it started as the story of Nicole and Prezra with Aria filling in as Nicole. But as we go along, it starts to sound like it's actually the Aria-Prezra romance story.
It does start to seem that way. Hard to say what is happening with this book. But poor Liam, he is a good guy, and he is getting broken up with by Aria and her, like, multi-tassel earrings.
Yes. Yeah. Aria has quite a look in this scene.
Yeah, it is really something. Also, like, again, with, like, the liar couples being so bad at communication, like, I know everyone is always like, well, you know, I want to break up with this person, but I want to be kind. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. It is not realistic to break up without hurting someone's feelings. And I don't know why, like, there's this idea that, like, being broken up with for, like, no one in particular would be worse than being broken up with, you know, like why that's better than being broken up with, like, because someone has gotten back together with their ex stalker predator boyfriend. Sure, there's a lot of stuff going on there, but I just think, like, everyone would be better off in this episode if they were just telling their partners the truth.
Agreed. And also, as a side note, for some reason they had to show us all that gross stuff in the previouslys. I wish that they would have, because I had totally forgotten that Liam didn't know the Prezria backstory until later in this episode. And then it's like Aria tells him and you're like, oh, okay, so clearly he didn't know. But they should have done a previously or something that established that, or had a line of dialogue or something, because I think that that is an important piece of this episode that is confusingly communicated.
Especially because the audience has known the Prezria backstory exactly. For so long. Like, it would definitely, be better to, it's one of those things that, like, this episode just seems to be, like, missing certain moments, and yes. that is a moment that would have been really important for us to be reminded of. One other thing that I like about Liam in this scene is that he does tell Aria to stop apologizing, which we know is her absolute go-to move, the Prezra relationship, because that's what Prezra consistently expects.
Correct.
So, elsewhere, Hannah is looking over the contract from Lucas, and I guess signing a contract or maybe looking at business-related paperwork reminds her of when she was doing a bunch of thankless tasks for Claudia while at a bar. I really have no idea why Hannah would be doing all this work at a loud bar, but okay. Jordan, and like not even at a table, like in the restaurant part of the bar, just like at the bar, like papers spread out, like talking on little earbuds, yelling at someone about Claudia's seat assignment in a really specific way. It definitely seems like someone, maybe Marlene, insists on having that seat assignment when they travel. At any rate, Jordan is there. He puts his sweaty glass on Hannah's napkin, and Hannah is snarky to him. And then they have dinner, and we get a montage of talking and laughing that is meant to indicate that they have chemistry and banter without the writers needing to trouble themselves about actually creating it. Hannah smiles at this memory.
Yeah, it's definitely the writers, the shorthand of like, they're a good match, you know, without a lot of extra work being put in.
Well, we saw that when we got Emily and Allison talking and laughing in the kitchen with the long pan, like a couple of episodes before the end of the last season. Like, this is just a shorthand that they're going to, where they just kind of have the actors like, mime talking and laughing like you're in an improv class.
Yeah,
exactly. we are so pretty and witty, and then like, right, they're meant to be everyone
pretty and witty, but sadly not gay.
Or are they
So the liars are now over at the liars minus Hannah are over at the De Laurentiis house, begging Elliot to see Allie. But he takes a harder line here about how this is what she needs, this separation. Spencer argues that perhaps the doctor-husband combo is not the greatest, and he snarks about having been around here longer. I really like Arya just cuts through the BS, and she's like, okay, this isn't a competition about who cares about Allison the most. We all want her to get better. Emily, I think, would like it to be a competition, but that's neither here nor there. And then Elliot invokes Jason, saying that Jason approves of her treatment and that says that he is, you know, not wanting Mary Drake to come visit. To which I say, like, the Mary Drake football is weird. Like, the way that everybody is, like, sometimes she seems to be aligned with Rollins. Sometimes she seems to be more aligned with the liars. Also because, like, she hasn't actually ever met Allison that we know of. When Elliot goes to take a call, Arya grumbles about Spencer's lack of diplomacy. They get a text from AD that Allie is mine now, and they wonder if AD is already in Welby while they look at Elliot suspiciously. Obviously, Elliot is very annoying, and a lot of the arguments are somewhat nonsensical here, but I actually really liked this scene from the standpoint of that it feels like it's been a while since we've, like, seen the liars kind of get to play off of each other in this way. And I liked Arya being kind of like snarky to Spencer and Spencer kind of being snarky back.
Yeah, I agree. Also, the AD message says that she's mine now, no take backs, to which AD has obviously not watched earlier seasons of the show, which are all take backs. Take backs is all over the plot.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Oh, boy. Okay, so Hannah is in Jordan's office, and she is wearing this very short red dress. This is a deliberate choice, I think. You know, deliberately, after the mention of her having that dollhouse look, here she is, described, I mean, I would say that she is all dolled up. She has her legs on his desk. She is here to surprise him. And before I get to the meat of this scene, it must be noted that the set design people did not make enough walls here. Like, there's exposed brick and gray walls and a big window, and, like, that's all fine, but the wall that Jordan is standing in front of is cinder block. Like, dorm room stripes painted on it, cinder block, which is, like, Wow. Anyway, Hannah is kind of taking Caleb's suggestion about going back to the beginning and just applying it here. She apologizes for not being a model fiancé. They talk about what is drawing her back to Rosewood again and again. She wants them to go back to that little bar where they met and just kind of start over. Jordan is up for a midday drink in the name of fun.
Yeah, he's kind of gross because he's like, I remember fun at one point, and talks about how, like, this is where it's so weird that they didn't have Jordan know that Hannah has been kidnapped, because, like, again, the audience has seen all of this, and so the audience is like, God, Jordan's being a real jerk to his girlfriend who was just kidnapped. But it's like, as far as he knows, it's his girlfriend who's just been ghosting him for the last week. So it's like, it's a weird choice to have him not know. And I think they probably made that because they didn't want it to be like he, you know, like they were staying together because of the trauma, because they want to get Jordan out of there. But like, it's an odd writing choice.
It is an odd writing choice. And they have him, like, when she's saying, I haven't been the model fiancé, he's like, you know, that's not a job, right? Like, you know, it's okay. But the thing is that, like, the thing that they are not doing is connecting as two people who have, like, a history and a future together. Like, she is still acting like he is a guy she is meeting in a bar for the first time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah, she's got this kind of, like, fembot energy about her here. It's interesting because I feel like in this scene, Ashley Benson's obvious detachment to this whole show actually kind of works, because it's like she seems really disengaged from this conversation, which like kind of works in this context.
And so I
do like that. And I really do appreciate that this episode is like at least lightly grazing the surface of addressing Hannah's trauma.
Yeah, I would for sure agree with that. Did you have any thoughts on the lack of enough walls in Jordan's office?
You know, I didn't. You tend to notice more of the set design details, which I admire. I did just like, I mean, I think it, like, once again, it's that thing where it's like, sometimes the liars can just leave Rosewood and sometimes they're bound forever. And it's like, oh, Hannah just like hopped on over to New York. No harm, no foul, you know?
Also, could she just stay in New York now? They've sold Allison out as the potential murderer. Like, is Hannah released? It seems like maybe she could be.
But now it's this whole Lucas thing to keep her in Rosewood. They're just coming up with these more and more contrived reasons to keep her in Rosewood. Yeah. So over at the Hastings house, Emily and Spencer are having the same argument again about Mary Drake. And this is where I took the note that I like how everyone, including me, always refers to her as Mary Drake. Emily says that she doesn't think they need to trust Mary, but she might be their only way in to see Allie. She says that the fact that Spencer was in Radley means that somehow she and Mary Drake have this, like, cosmic understanding of one another, which is interesting and odd and also strange that this was never argued in relationship to why Spencer might have an understanding of Charlotte or even Mona. And also, how are they going to use Mary if Rollins isn't allowing her in, was another question of mine. But anyway, this scene basically ends with, like, Spencer kind of taking that in.
Yes. I mean, this is, like, nice that Emily is now having this, like, really elevated level of concern for Allison's welfare. But I think that would have been super nice for her to have prior to Emily signing her into Welby and then accusing her of murdering Charlotte.
Yes, agreed. Completely agreed.
So Aria and Prezra are sitting on a bench having coffee. She is repeating Rollins' story about having talked to Jason. And Prezra is like, the bros have been trying to bro at him through the bro network with no success. This is suspicious. Also, the bro network is apparently Toby trying to get Jason to confirm Mary Drake's story, which is hilarious because Jason never remembers anything. So getting him to, like, confirm the existence of someone that no one else knew about is pretty laughable. And also, Arya's response is, like, he needs more proof than her face. Okay, Aria. I like your energy there. They talk about Liam. Krezra is meeting with him at 4 p.m. Arya is not sure that they can make this all work, but Krezra vows that he will make it so. He will man it into fruition. Meanwhile, Liam is staring at them as they hold hands and do some light canoodling there in the town square. Liam's face is stormy and mad.
Yeah, this is a classic, almost like a throwback Presria scene where it's like Arya is anxious, Presria is dismissive, and they're canoodling in broad daylight despite the fact that their relationship is allegedly a secret. Second verse, same as the first.
So typical.
This scene, it is the meeting of Arya's men. They're staged, they're like sitting across from each other. We're seeing them kind of in shadow a little bit. Liam has some notes and mentions the predatory nature of the protagonist's actions. Presra is quite shocked by this, saying, "You think he comes across as predatory?" Liam brings up the Lolita myth, then praises Nicholas Sparks, sick writer burn, as an author who understands what makes a reader's skin crawl. Presra argues that they aren't that far apart in age, but Liam replies that Presra is too invested in his hero and wanting to justify his actions. Neither of them want Arya to look foolish, right? Like she got talked into something. Liam says that he is here to protect both of his writers from a loss of perspective, poor judgment, and avoidable bad choices. Presra smiles his tight, murderous grin, and God, do I love Liam.
Oh my gosh, I do too. I love how smiley Presra gets in this scene because it really shows the ways in which he just falls back on his charm to try to get out of these situations. And I know that we are supposed to think that Liam is making trouble because of sour grapes, but this is really like the Noel Kahn redux. A guy who has legitimate feelings for Arya clearly sees that Presra is a creep and a predator, and the show just tries to write it off as jealousy. Also, Liam should 100% tell Jillian about the Presria stuff immediately, because if it came out that these authors got involved while she was in high school and he was her teacher, they would have to pull the book off the market. And since basically everyone in town knows they were involved, the chances of that not coming out are right around zero.
Yes. Yeah, that is a really good point. Yeah. I mean, yes, that would be a big scandal and a big deal.
Yes. Book Twitter.
Oh boy. Watch out. Well, oh boy. It would be a thing. It would be a thing. Yeah. It would make Bad Art Friend seem like no big deal. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yes.
At the Hastings campaign headquarters, where everything is completely deserted and Veronica's entire staff must, I guess, be on the cruise with her. Spencer is at campaign headquarters, but talking on the phone to her actual job and saying that she has commitments here and she'll give them a hard date for her return as soon as she has one. Cue Mary Drake arriving, having seen Spencer inside and wanting to ask about Hannah. Now, I don't know how Mary saw Spencer in here because all of the windows are covered with like transparencies of Veronica's face and the American flag. The better to have Mary step in front of them to really reinforce the point about her being Spencer's secret mother, stepping in front of Veronica. Mary is concerned that perhaps she should have taken Hannah to the police or the hospital. Spencer asks why she didn't. Mary says her experience with the police and hospitals have not been the best. Spencer inquires further, and Mary Drake tells a tale of Jessica babysitting a neighbor boy and calling Mary for help because the baby would not stop crying. By the time Mary got there, the baby was quiet and Jessica wanted to leave to meet some boy. The parents came home. Mary said Jessica left with a headache. Screams ensue. The baby was dead. Everyone believes Jessica, that things were fine when she left and Mary got packed off to Radley. This is a compelling tale. Do we believe it?
I mean, one of the things I just love about it is like the idea of Jessica leaving to go meet some boy and leaving Mary to deal with this baby is so Allison. Like, that is an Allison move. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I believe this. And I almost think, like, it almost feels like, you know, Schrodinger's baby story. Like, it's both true and not true or something, you know? I don't know if I believe this story. I think that, like, Mary seems to believe it to a certain degree. I think Spencer seems to believe it to a certain degree. And I think that, like, one of the things that I took note of in this episode is, like, a thing that Mary does super well is that similar to the way that Allison modified her behavior to each liar to get the reaction that she wanted, Mary is doing the same thing. And Mary is really playing on Spencer's relationship with Melissa here.
Oh, yes. Because Spencer can definitely imagine everyone believing Melissa over her in a similar situation.
Yes. Or even within Spencer's rivalry with Allison, you know. Mm-hmm. What about you? Do you believe it?
Well, first of all, I love this for Mary Drake. Spencer is her secret daughter. And this is the second time of her meeting her. Her first time of meeting her, she, like, implied that she was maybe in a swinging situation with both of Spencer's parents. I guess she probably met Spencer when she dropped Hannah off. And then now, so the second or second and a half time of meeting her, she's dropping this, like, how the neighbor boy got murdered story.
Yes.
Which, you know, coming in at an 11, really a Rosewood tradition. So love this for her. I have to say, things that we know about Mary Drake, facts that we know about Mary Drake, she murdered Jessica. But that was after Jessica was apparently going to tag team murder her with Peter's help. She conspired to have Allison sent to the mental hospital, but seems to be having some regrets or second thoughts about that. Jessica buried Allison alive and abandoned Charlotte to Radley. I think they really seem like equally amoral figures.
Yes. I'm very curious what their parents were like. I'm thinking difficult. Also, I don't know if you felt this way. I felt like Troyan was slightly mimicking Andrea Parker's delivery in this scene,
yes!
Which I loved.
Yes, I really liked that as well.
Andrea Parker has this way of, like, it's like her voice sort of drops into this, like, low register that's, like, this kind of, like, whispery, intense register. And she's, like, very, like, her mouth gets very tight. And Troyan was, like, kind of delivering her lines the same way, which I thought was great.
Yeah, I really love, I mean, it's, like, it's super cheesy the way they're doing it. Like, she's stepping literally in front of the giant image of Veronica's face. Like, she's standing right there to talk to Spencer in the scene. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like they're doing so much work to make you feel like, look how similar Mary Drake and Spencer are. My goodness. Like, they're doing everything but giving Mary Drake bangs.
And yes.
That was probably, like, just, you know, they were a hair's breadth away from it.
Yes, so to speak. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the thing that it's fun about this story is, like, much like, you know, it's similar, right, to when Charlotte told the story of how, like, oh, it wasn't me who was involved in Toby's mom's death. It was that bitch, Bethany Young. You know, it was like all of the things that I was blamed for, some other bitch did and then blamed on me. And it's like in both cases, it sort of doesn't matter because the figure in question, like you said, is like a pretty immoral figure. But it adds this element of sort of like pathos, whether real or imagined, to their character that is quite a lot of fun.
Agreed.
So Arya is shocked at whatever Prezra has told her about this conversation with Liam. Liam can just be really passionate about writing, Arya says. But no, what Prezra got was anger at him. He's worried about the book and he's worried about them. Arya doesn't understand. To which I say, oh, come on, Arya. And Prezra asks, what does Liam really know about them? Now, what do you imagine was Prezra's retelling of the conversation with Liam?
Oh my goodness. I am sure in his retelling, Liam was just like so strangely aggressive, and he really seemed to no longer appreciate like Prezra's writing and his sections of the book. And it wasn't, I think he even says at one point, like, this wasn't criticism, this was anger.
Yes.
So yeah, I think he's like saying that Liam is not going to be a good steward of this project because he is too jealous of Prezra. I think that that is Prezra's takeaway. I do not think that Prezra has mentioned anything about like the implications of predatory behavior.
That's what I was just going to say. There is absolutely no way that Prezra used the word predatory in his retelling of this conversation.
No. Prezra is always the victim, as we know.
Of course. If anyone was the predator, it was Liam.
Oh, yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Poor Prezra. He got preyed upon.
I could see Prezra doing a thing where he said something like, the word predator was mentioned, you know, like, just completely passive voice. Like, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, the way he says that, the way that that's the final line of the scene, like, what does Liam know about this? He's just implying that this is all her fault. Whatever she told
yes.
him about this is what's now causing problems.
Exactly.
Which, again, we heard Liam say, stop apologizing. Like, this is like Prezra, like, start apologizing. Come on.
Yes.
Tell me
exactly.
You're sorry for the fact that this man hurt my man baby feelings.
And also, go fix it. That's the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Take care of this little lady. So, in New York, Hannah and Jordan are discovering that the bar where they met is no longer there. It's been torn down and it's being redeveloped into something else. Jordan is unfazed. They can go somewhere else. This is New York. They tear things down as quickly as they put them up. But Hannah feels like this means they have no beginning anymore. She was hoping they could go back and it would help them to start over. Again, it would be more helpful as if she could just level with Jordan about what is going on. She's not sure about their future, that she recently kissed her ex-boyfriend, that she was kidnapped yesterday, etc. But instead, she is throwing all of her focus onto this building. Jordan asks her what it is that she wants. He says he'd move heaven and earth for her. Hannah says she knows. Then she hands him the ring back. Then, going out like they started, we pan out to a long shot of the two of them being sat next to a taxi, talking without us having to hear any of the conversation.
Because why would they write that? When they could just pan away.
Jordan, we barely knew you.
We really did. Yeah, that's a wrap on Jordan, everybody. It is interesting, this kind of like, you know, this idea of like wiping your slate clean and this idea of almost like, I was thinking about the idea of like sin and how it's like Hannah wants to go back to a time when she feels like she was, could be like wiped clean of the sins that she feels like she's sort of committed that have landed her here. But it's a really interesting idea, and it's an idea that I wish got explored further, and I wish got explored outside of just the Jordan relationship. Like, I wish that Hannah got to express what she's going through in more ways than just this relationship.
Well, one of the things that Hannah says, I don't remember if it's in this scene or the one in his office, she says, that she thought she had it figured out. Everybody could get what they wanted. And I feel like that speaks to Hannah feeling like she should let Spencer have Caleb. She can just be with Jordan and then everything is going to be fine. But I also think that this is a function of the liar's trauma, which is something we're dealing with in this episode, where the only thing that Hannah can imagine right now is going backwards, is going to backwards into her relationship with Caleb or back to where she started out with Jordan. Like, Hannah is not having any success at this point in the episode in imagining what her future might look like.
Well, I agree. And I think that this is also like the It Follows nature of the liar's trauma, where it's like, you know, Caleb has already been touched by A and touched by this situation. So it's like, if she goes back to him, she's not bringing this into anybody else's life because this already exists in Caleb's life. But I think that there's sort of this fear about extending this, the arm of this trauma further into the life of somebody who's sort of new, who's sort of an outsider. And it, yeah, it's unfortunate that it's like the conclusion that the show and the liars both land on, rather than like, you can communicate with people and you can, you know, like work through things with new people and like grow your community that way. It doesn't have to be just the people who have experienced this all firsthand. It's like the conclusion instead is this extremely insular, like, well, you can only be with the, you know, the five people who have ever known everything you've ever gone through. Like, those are the only people who could ever love or understand you.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So over at the Radley, Emily is filling out a job application, which means that it is almost suspenders o'clock. This is an interesting turn for Emily Fields, because we have not really heard Emily talk about her need for employment, or, you know, she's talked a little bit about enrolling in Rosewood, or enrolling at Hollis and therefore staying in Rosewood. But, like, it seems it's all been a bit nebulous. It's all been a little bit vague. It's still not entirely clear, like, what money she got from the whole egg donation thing. It seems like she got some money. We have not seen Ashley in a while. We have not heard whether the Radley is in need of new staff members. But here we are. Emily's going to be a bartender. Blink and you miss this job application.
Can I talk for just a moment about this job
absolutely.
Application? I mean, longtime listeners will know that I am openly obsessed with the economy of Rosewood. And here we have another incredible data point. This job application asks Emily to indicate what middle school she attended, but requires no information at all on her previous work history. What possible information could be gleaned from knowing what middle school someone attended? This is wild, truly wild. I am honestly surprised she did not just borrow Hannah's move of writing, "My friend's mom runs the joint" on a napkin and then turning that in. Then again, maybe this is a good move on Emily's part. I cannot imagine that her previous jobs would give her stellar references if they were contacted. Like, well, she would do a solid 20 minutes of work before disappearing every shift. Or, well, she brought in lots of customers who were actually just her friends and enemies visiting her constantly. Dear Lord!
Yes. She was really good at flinging an apron at somebody and screaming, "Cover for me."
Like, her job in California would be like, oh, is she not coming back?
I mean, I know we've talked about this headcanon a little bit before, but, like, totally my headcanon about Emily's, like, bartending job in California is that she was just constantly taking home women from the bar and also probably taking them into the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, 100% agree.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, just then Mary Drake walks in, and Mary Drake, much the way that Allison would kind of play the role of like, oh, Emily, I'm so scared. I need you to walk me to class. I'm so confused. I'm so overwhelmed. Mary Drake is going to play that same role. She comes in looking like a scared child who's been abandoned at a carnival by her family. She's just sort of nervously staring at the walls and kind of seems to be maybe blinking back some tears. And of course, Emily approaches her and asks if Mary would like to sit down. Mary says that, you know, it's just odd to be back in this place, that, you know, it used to be very scary at the Radley because at night the boys in town used to rattle sticks on the bars. It would be a dare to see who was going to come to the mental institution. Sometimes, though, you find tenderness in the last place you expect. And that's really all any of us need to survive, a little tenderness. Emily quickly pivots to say that she went to visit Allison, but she wasn't let in by Elliot. And Mary speaks vaguely about how professional Elliot seems in the bit of conversation that he's offered her. Emily is feeling guilty, wondering if she did the right thing by letting Allison check herself into Welby, which, great time to be having regrets, Emily. Obviously you did the wrong thing. She doesn't know if she helped, and she suggests that Mary talk to someone at Welby. I don't know, Emily. That would be like challenging Dr. Rollins. But oh, an idea has just occurred to Mary. What if they went to Welby together? This scene is so fun because Emily thinks that, like, in this chess match, she is somehow sort of outsmarting Mary Drake. And Mary Drake is 12 steps ahead of Emily. Mary Drake checkmated Emily, like, 10 moves ago.
It's so true. It's so true. Also, I really enjoy how we both have, like, a Mary Drake voice that we're doing.
Yes.
When we talk, like, because she has quite a few, like, soliloquies in this episode where she, like, just waxes, like, philosophic about, like, all these things that she's been through. I like that we both kind of go into, like, a soap opera style voice when discussing the information she is dropping here.
Yeah, it's, like, kind of whispery. It's, like, almost mid-Atlantic a little bit. Like, it's, yes, it's very fun.
Yeah, I feel like she is a approximately 3 seconds away. Like, Emily has already, like, bought into this, but I feel like if Emily had exhibited any reluctance, like, we would be, like, just maybe 5 seconds away from her revealing, like, that she slept with Ashley Marin at some point. Like, she would,
yes,
like, definitely, like, you know, get into some of her, like, her own queer hijinks to, like, draw Emily further.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Ashley said that she wanted to take me to Paris and thought I'd look beautiful on top of the Eiffel Tower. I wonder if you can relate to any part of that story, Emily.
Yeah, she would just be like, I know how I always wanted my girlfriend to act when I was in the mental hospital. Can I give you some pointers?
Oh, man. It's so good. And it's so, like, it's so funny to see Mary Drake with Emily because, like, Emily is, like, probably the least savvy of the liars when it comes to, like, navigating being manipulated. I mean, it's a toss-up between Emily and Arya, but, like, it is so funny. The way that Mary Drake, like, the second she walks into the Radley, before Emily even lays eyes on her, Mary Drake is, like, acting the part of the traumatized woman, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, like, I think you do have to say, like, Emily is the most naive. Like, Emily, who, when they were doing the murder mystery game, she is, like, when they're doing the murder mystery game, she wrote down no name on her piece of paper.
Exactly, exactly. Because like, she's like, I'm going to opt out of this one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, so Lucas and Hannah are together at the loft, and Hannah wants to borrow his pen, which Lucas clearly hopes is code for his penis to sign. She wants this more than she wants anything else right now, she says. Lucas is elated as he clocks the lack of engagement ring on her hand.
Ugh, it's so gross. Like, you can tell that he is just, like, completely doing the math on this. Also, he opens this scene up by saying, you know, if this doesn't work out, that's okay. We can always work on another project together, which, like, what? What? Like, the project of uniting your genitals? Like, what? Yeah. What is this, Lucas? What is this? So Arya is very angry with Liam not being more accepting of her predator boyfriend. Liam says that, you know, he was okay at first, but then reading those pages and hearing Prezra talk, now he's suspicious. A lot of unconnected things that he didn't want to connect are finally making sense. Their history, what Arya has been writing, how she's been writing, what changes in a room when they've been alone together and someone else walks in. What do these connections mean, she wonders. He says that he thinks she was seduced by her English teacher when she was in high school. Arya hesitates for a second and then says, that's not how it happened. And Liam is just kind of gobsmacked by the fact that she doesn't even try to lie to him. He has, I think, one of the best lines in relationship to the Prezria relationship ever, where she says something about, like, I don't even know how to begin explaining this to you. And he says to her, start by how you'd explain it to yourself. Which, oh man, if that is not at the heart of the Prezria relationship. Arya says that she used to wonder, what if there was a button and all of the things that made her life complicated could be uncomplicated? you know, all of the things that she had done and the people who had gotten hurt and the lies that she'd been told. But if she pushed that button, she would be gone too. She is who she is because of what happens, what's happened to her and what she's done and who she's loved. Now, obviously, this justification and the way that it's sort of attempting to wrap Presria up in a neat little bow is very gross. But I also really am fascinated by this glimpse that we are getting into the lies that Arya has had to tell herself to sort of function in this relationship, and like the way that she has had to kind of reframe the trauma that has happened to her, and the way that it clearly, like, if this is actually what she believes and she's not just spinning something for Liam's sake, like, she seems to believe that she is essentially like the sum of the parts of her trauma more than she is a complete person. And I just find this very, very interesting. And it's really like, because the liars have grown up with Arya, and because like Presra has done such a great job of grooming not only Arya, but like her parents and the other friends and basically the community into thinking he's just this great guy who fell for this girl. Like, it is very rare for us to get an outsider perspective from another adult on the Presria situation. And it is really fascinating for Liam as this character to be coming in saying, hey, this is not okay. Like, this is not a normal okay thing that happened here. And Arya being like, stop. Like, you're messing up my fantasy here. Like, I have a whole story about what this is. And like, you're twisting my words. You're twisting the whole situation around. And he's like, he's basically saying, like, lie to me about it. I want you to lie to me about it. And she's saying, no, I'm not going to, because there's nothing wrong with it. It's really interesting.
Well, I think it's interesting that Arya, she legitimately looks shocked when he says this to her, when he says, I think that when you were in high school, you were seduced by your English teacher. She is shocked by this. Like, she and Presra have spent so much time talking about, like, oh, what everyone will think of us, how everyone will misunderstand this relationship. But this is maybe the first time that someone has said out loud to her, you were seduced by your English teacher, and that was really messed up. She has been lying to herself for so long that this truth feels shocking and unfamiliar when she is presented with it. And I think that is fascinating. Also, what she says about how she used to think that she would push the button to undo everything that she has gone through. She talks about, you know, everyone who should be, you know, who would be alive. I feel like that is a reference to Shauna, another thing that we don't often get. You know, Arya definitely went through a lot of trauma over what happened there. But I think overall, this is a really nice Arya as A speech, honestly, because she's so unrepentant about it. She's still saying, I would choose me in this relationship I have with my English teacher over erasing all of that stuff. It's interesting. And of course, this is what she needs to believe, because she needs to say that it was her choice and not Presra's.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
But I love this scene. I'm sad that this is like Liam's last scene that I think we're going to see him in. But
is this really his last scene?
I have to check back in, but I think it may be.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to, while you talk about the next scene, I'm going to do a little research and see if that's true.
Okay. So in Welby, Allison is looking very sweaty and distressed. Every time they show Allie, she's looking extremely sweaty in this episode.
There's
I don't really know why. It's like, it's as if, in addition to giving up on wardrobe, because now they're just like throwing her under a sheet and strapping her down on a bed, they've also given up on makeup and they're just kind of like splashing some water on her face or something. But Emily has now come by to see her. Allison is pretty out of it. She wonders if she's in Radley. She tells Emily that they'll miss their flight, to which Emily sweetly replies, we'll take the next one. Mary Drake lurks in the corner. Emily tries to ask about the phone call. Allie doesn't remember making it, but says that this is a scary place. She thinks that there's something wrong with her. When Mary Drake steps forward, Allison thinks that it's Jessica and starts asking her, calling her mommy, asking her why she buried her underground where it was so cold. She also says that Elliot is nothing like she said. Emily perks up. What's this about Elliot? Suddenly, the overhead lights go on, and Elliot himself is there, glowering in the doorway, mad, mad, mad. The nurse is like, this lady is a relative. He kind of spits at everyone to get out now. He just glowers some more at Allison and then turns the light off again as they all storm out together.
Yeah, so you were right. This is the last Liam episode, and it just says for the next episode, Arya reveals that Liam went back to Boston. And so, yeah, so this is it. You know, take a bow, Liam. This scene is really, like, I hate all the Ally torture porn, all the Ally, like, medical trauma stuff. But I do really kind of like this scene. I like the way that Emily kind of plays along with, like, Ally's delusions here. And I also love the line, took me longer to get here than I thought it would. Which, like, if that isn't the Emerson mission statement, I don't know what is.
Agree.
Yeah. So outside of this room, Emily demands to know what has happened to Allison since she was not like this. What, like 2 days ago when Emily checked her in? Maybe? We don't know. Elliot, though, only wants a word with Mary, and he instructs the nurse that no one is to come in. And we kind of go into this, like, secret evil meeting where Elliot is British again. And Mary says that she's been calling him for 2 days. We're kind of cutting back and forth where Emily is overhearing them arguing, but not hearing what they're arguing about. Rollins says that what he, or Mary says that what Rollins is doing to Ally isn't part of the plan, and he has gone too far. He says that she hasn't gotten her money yet, and he sort of physically menaces her in a way that I think we're meant to interpret as, like, is Elliot the one in charge?
Yeah, this is really a big mishmash of, like, what motive is what. Like,
yes.
Is money involved? Oh, he's going too far on this Allison thing. Like, you just don't really know what is happening. But the fact that Emily is just watching them behind this, like, window screen or whatever that it's like a pantomime, an elaborate shadow pantomime of the two of them arguing.
One of the things that I find quite strange about this is that it seems as though Elliot and Mary Drake had an idea that Allison had killed Charlotte, mm-hmm. but that this jacket, this, like, mystical red jacket, was, like, the thing that made them convinced of it. But I find it really strange that, like, in their private moments together, Elliot and Mary, they're not really confirming or denying whether they actually think that Allison killed Charlotte, or, like, they have some other theory and just the torturing Allison is, like, part of it. Like,
yeah,
I find it odd. Like, it would be so easy in this scene for Elliot to reply, like, I'm not going too far. Like, she killed Charlotte. This is what she deserves or something. But they don't say that, which, like, just like you were saying, like, it just makes the motive feel that much more muddled.
Well, yeah. And we don't hear anything about the sweater this week.
No, not at all. Outside of, like, the first scene when the liars were vaguely to Hannah, like, we found evidence.
Well, yeah, like, when you were talking about how we didn't have any kind of reminder that Liam wasn't clued into the Presria of it all previously, and when you said we haven't really heard anything about Emily saying that she wants to get a job, or about Ashley saying they need more staff at the Radley, like, as if that scene existed but got cut somehow, and then again here, like, some kind of reference to, like, the sweater, or whether they think that Allison killed Charlotte, and why Mary Drake, if she thinks that, also thinks he's going too far. It's all just a mess.
Well, and I do think that all of this is kind of, like, a symptom of this hard turn that the sort of reset that the show is trying to do. Like, I do think that they recognize that some aspects of 6B were really not working. And so I think that there seems to be a level of, like, urgency of, like, okay, we got to get the random boyfriends out of here. We got to explain why the liars are all still in town. We got to, like, give some semblance of a new big bad. Like, and there's sort of this haste to, like, get all of those, you know, pieces on the board, in a sense. And I think as a result, like, they're just kind of dropping a lot of maybe important details along the way.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I just want to point out that the open of the first episode of this season had the liars digging up, digging a shallow grave of some kind. This episode has completely dropped that as part of the frame.
Yes.
So if we remembered that we saw the liars digging a grave or that they're going to be digging a grave an unknown number of days from now, that is not on the radar any longer in this episode.
No, it is not. It is not.
So, at the Hastings, Spencer is drinking Peter's expensive scotch. Caleb arrives and asks what the occasion is. God, poor Spencer. She got fired today on top of everything else. She got fired by text. So I'm definitely thinking that her political job was like one of those highly dysfunctional nonprofits. Anyway, they told her that she had abused the generosity of the organization. Caleb pours himself a drink without being invited to and says that he is so sorry. They're wrong. Spencer is fairly chill about it. She says that they're right. She has been distracted lately. It's fine. She'll stay on with her mom's transition team, maybe go to Harrisburg with her if Rosewood doesn't exert its terrible gravity to prevent her from doing that. She asks him how Hannah is, and Caleb, like, drinks deep and says, well, he hasn't talked to her. That means he's just been out avoiding Spencer all day. How nice. He mentions Hannah texting Emily that she was going to New York and supplies that she must have wanted to see Jordan. Spencer says that she hates to ask, but she has to. Did they make a mistake? This thing between them, did they make a mistake? And Caleb immediately says, no, this wasn't a mistake. It was real. And then Spencer quite rightly asks him, if that's the case, why is he talking about it in the past tense? This was very graceful of Spencer. This is a graceful out that she is giving him here. She's not directly accusing him of anything. Hannah remains unnamed, but he is still not taking it because he is the most terrible version of himself right now. The worst. Their discussion is cut short by a text from Emily saying that Allison is much worse.
Yeah, remember how last week I was saying that, like, the scene of the liars and Mona all debating who the killer could be was, like, probably directly lifted from the writer's room? I feel like this exchange was, like, directly lifted from the writer's room. Like, one of the writers was like, ooh, the fans on Twitter don't like Spaleb. Did we make a mistake? And, like, whichever writer, maybe it was Marlene, or maybe it was, like, whichever writer is, like, the Spaleb shipper was like, no, we didn't make a mistake. Like, whatever this was, it wasn't a mistake. And the first writer was like, gotcha, you used the past tense, hashtag Caleb forever. But this is, I mean, I agree, this is very graceful, but it's also frustrating because it's like, once again, they're being so vague about anything. Like, when she says, did we make a mistake? It's like, that is so vague. Like, is she, like, she could be talking about them, but she also could be talking about, like, did we make a mistake turning Allison in? Did we make a mistake, you know, like, saving my mom's political campaign? Like, did we make a mistake? Like, there are so many different things that they could be talking about here.
There are, but he definitely takes it as she intended by saying, like, yes, this thing between us was real.
It, totally, which also, I mean, you could also interpret that as a little bit of a test on Spencer's part, right? Like, I'm going to throw out the vague question, and I'm going to see which mistake he thinks I'm talking about. And, yeah, so this is what I meant about, like, the slow erosion of Caleb. Like, it's like, they should break up here, but they don't, and it's going to be, like, several more episodes before they actually break up.
True.
We kind of, this is like a little sequence where it's like they get that text from Emily about Allison. Emily is like continuing to watch this situation unfolding between Mary and Rollins. Rollins is like, has Mary like reared back as he seems to be ranting at her. The second text comes in to Aria, who is writing over at Prezra's, and this text asks if Rollins is in charge. Then we see Hannah is sketching some designs, which I felt like this was like a nice, peaceful place to leave Hannah in this episode that has been anything but peaceful for her.
Agree. I can definitely take a stretcher is being wheeled down the hall of Welby. Allie, whose face is still so sweaty, is asleep, and we see her in like a tiny mirror. Something is being injected into her IV. Then she's on the bed being wheeled somewhere. She's kind of slowly coming to, and they're heading into an OR with bright white lights that basically looks like an alien abduction layer, the way that it's framed. The screen whites out just as she is presumably about to be impregnated with the rape babies.
Yeah, and yet I also feel like the way that this is filmed is almost meant for us to think, like, is this heaven? Like, is Allison...
Yes, is she dying? Yeah, yes. I agree. It's just like this bright, bright white light that she is being taken into.
Yeah, and there's a definite sense that, like, obviously Rollins has been drugging her, but with whichever new drug was just administered to her is, like, more extreme than she's had so far. And that's the end of the episode. Like, a very bleak ending for the episode.
It is. So, Vina, which couple do you think has the worst communication in this episode, where every couple has terrible communication? Is it Spalen, Haleb, Presria, Liam and Arya, Jordan and Hannah? Who is it?
Oh, boy. I am gonna... I almost think it is dead even between Jordan, Hannah, and Spalen. What about you?
I think that... did you say Spalen or Haleb?
I said Spalen, but I can see the argument for Haleb as well.
Yeah, I think... I do think that Jordan and Hannah, like, the fact that she is not telling him that she was just kidnapped is really probably, like, the biggest thing that someone is not telling their partner in this episode. And also the fact that, like, two of their scenes have no dialogue. I think that Hannah and Jordan are probably the winners. But yeah, Caleb and anyone he comes across in this episode is a close second.
It's rough. And, like, one of the things that is sad is that, and maybe we're meant to think that these things are happening off screen, but it's like, it's not even like the liars are able to be communicating with each other about, you know, their concerns with their relationships or anything. So it's just, nobody's really communicating with anybody, which is rough. But I do think that this episode, like, I feel like at this point, and this is not ultimately how I feel about the series, but at this point, it did seem to me like the show was steering in a direction that seemed more promising. Like, the giving concrete reasons for the liars to actually be staying in Rosewood, getting rid of these, like, extra boyfriends milling about. Notably also, like, a number of other things have changed. Like, the whole thing of the text appearing on the screen, that's gone away. Now
it
we're
has.
Just
it was
seeing
terrible.
The text on the phone. Also, we're not seeing people in masks poking around, and we're not seeing the black town car anymore.
Oh, so that's really, really great points there. I think, and as of next week, it's going to be an end, like, it's going to be a quick end to Rollins.
Yeah. I mean, they are really clearing the deck here, which makes you almost excited as a viewer, because you think, like, oh, man, that must mean that they're planning something big. And it's like, no, it's just Spencer with Red Jackson. But I think, like, after a half season with zero momentum, it is sort of exciting to feel like there's finally a little bit of momentum happening.
Yeah, I would agree. It feels less like we're just treading water at this time. I will, however, say I am extremely bummed that after Mona was helping them throughout the Hannah kidnapping, that she is just like, oh, they were maybe expecting it to be her, and then it was the funeral arrangement of flowers, and then, like, that's all we get of Mona this week. We don't actually see her at all, which is always too bad.
And it's also super annoying, because there seemed to be the implication that, like, oh, now Mona, like, once again, it's like, now Mona might be part of the group, and it's like, no, she's not. She's not. But the next episode is The Talented Mr. Rollins, which is, I think, an episode title that makes a little bit more sense than some of the other ones. It's like, we're finally figuring out this dude is bad news, after it's been very clear from his, literally from his first minute on screen, that he is bad news.
Yes. Better late than never, though, liars.
I guess so. And I will never not find it funny the way that this show is, like, British, evil, you know, and like as soon as he becomes evil, he instantly returns to his Britishness.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, do we have anything more to say about Bedlam?
I think we have said it all.
What do you make of the episode title?
I mean, I think that they were just going for, like, they needed something that seemed, like, to vaguely reference a mental hospital, since we have, like, Allison being in one is, like, a pivotal part of this episode, and then just, like, the idea of, like, Bedlam also meaning, like, you know, chaos,
sure.
And things kind of running wild, So, yeah, I mean, it's not a great title, but again, like, we're grading on a curve post-jump, so I'll take it.
It's better than New Guys, New Lies. I'll give it that.
100%.
Yeah. Well, if you have any thoughts on this episode, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. You could also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We will be back next week with The Talented Mr. Rollins. And I'm curious if it will, like, continue this trend of being more enjoyable or, like, if it'll be just back to bad territory. We'll see.
We'll find out.
Until then.
Take care.